Members, we don't have a quorum yet, but we'll get Government Operations Committee hearing started. The first bill on our agenda is House File 2945. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you, Representative Murphy.
Thank you for being willing to hear our bill with the state auditor's plan for the on-session. It's not totally an on-session bill. It's a good government bill. And the auditor, Otto, will explain all parts of it.
Representative Otto, or excuse me, Auditor Otto.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you very much. House File, Rebecca Otto, the state auditor. House File 2945 is a good government bill. We have local governments in Minnesota who have OPEB, which is other post-employment benefits, which are not pensions, that would be like retiree health care. And they have the option of setting up a trust to fund their OPEB. They are required, now they can set up their trusts with either SBI, State Board of Investment, or with private trust departments and banks. And what this bill, all it does is, they are also required to report into my office certain information, certain data. And that data includes market value, contributions and withdrawals from these trusts, annual rates of return, and all costs and fees associated with management and administration of the plan. Then the trust administrators, when they report in, must certify that the information in the report is correct. And also, they must certify the rates of return are computed according to specific industry standards. The way the current law stands, the data that would be reported in would not be comparable. So what we did was we worked with State Board of Investment staff and we worked with PARA staff to fix the language so that this data will mean something when reported. And Mansco Perry is here today if you all have any questions for him as well.
Thank you all for the testimony. Any questions of the author or the testifier? Anybody in the audience that needs to speak for or against this bill? And I think we have a quorum now. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy. Just looking at the effective date, it says that the initial report is due no later than October 25th, 2015. What happens then? Is it, are there subsequent reports due, or how does that work?
Well, given the annual, I believe we will have an annual report after that.
I think, Representative Murphy, I think on line 1.19 it says annually, no later than. Any other questions? Again, anybody in the audience that needs to speak for or against this bill? What's that? Why don't you go check in? We think we have one more member outside the door. That if they're there, we'll have a quorum, and then we can take the action on the bill and get it out of here.
Thank you.
And this is going to General Register. We now have a quorum. I'll move that House File 2945 be placed on the General Register. Seeing nobody rushing to the microphone. All in favor of the bill, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. The bill's referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Murphy. Thank you, Auditor Otto.
Thank you.
Thank you, committee.
The next bill on our agenda is House File 2541. Representative Portman. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we are here because of the PACE provisions of this bill. I think that's the only thing that affects local governments. Mr. Chair, House File 2541, if you'd be willing to move it for me, I think. Where does it go next? To the floor.
House File, what I have here is I'll move House File 2541 be placed on the general register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And House File 2541 is the Department of Commerce's policy bill. And the provision that brings it before this committee is the Property Assessed Clean Energy provisions. Property Assessed Clean Energy, also known as PACE, is a program by which cities can offer to be a financing agent for energy improvements on a property. The best example I can give you is the restaurant Salute in Edina. Wanted to increase their energy efficiency, but that wasn't the smartest place for them to spend the next dollar to get more customers. So they spend their money on selling food and drink. But through the Property Assessed Clean Energy Program, they were able to get a loan that they repay on their property tax statement to increase the efficiency of their ventilation system in the kitchen. So it greatly reduces the amount of energy that they consume, cooling and things like that. And it's much more efficient. But they wouldn't have made the investment unless this Property Assessed Clean Energy Program was in place. Right now, we require a 10-year payback. So for Salute to get the City of Edina to approve it and put it on their property tax statement and pay it back that way, they had to show they would get energy savings within 10 years to pay back the amount that they invested in these improvements. What the statute would do, or what the bill in front of you would do, is it would extend that time period to 20 years. So it would allow people to do more complicated projects that have a longer payback period. And I know of no opposition to the bill.
I see you have a testifier with you. Or does she need to speak, or is she here to answer questions?
She's here for questions.
Questions by membership. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hortman, welcome. I think this is the first time I've ever had the opportunity to have you at the table with the bill. It's been a while, but I just have some just general questions. Is
sure.
This for commercial and or residential or all properties?
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, it is just for commercial properties because there's an indication from Fannie and Freddie that they're not okay with it, and since Fannie and Freddie underwrite most of the mortgages in the country, the reason why they're not okay is it would allow the city to be the first lien holder on the property, and Fannie and Freddie let no one get in front of them. I understand there might be some way to fix that, but I don't really know what it is, and we're not adopting it in Minnesota yet.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And Representative Hortman, you've actually anticipated my question as far as prioritization with liens. And it still could be an issue with this if there's an SBA loan on the building or on the others. Can you speak to the issue of any conversation you might have had with commercial lenders and their comfort level with this being, because I'm assuming this is going under Statute 429, which is Minnesota's assessment policy law?
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, it's 216C, and the lending community, my understanding, they really like this because it's another financing tool out there. So while they're doing commercial lending, like, for example, for Salute, for the improvements that Salute is making to sell more food and beverages, then this is another financing choice that they have to get a lower rate of interest and a longer payback period for something that's just strictly energy improvements. It's still totally private, though. I mean, Salute is paying back the City of Edina 100% for the improvements that they're making, but by putting it on your property tax statement, it allows you to get a lower rate of interest because you get to take advantage of the municipal bond rate.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know where you're going with it. I just want to make sure that we don't have any issues because 429 is the assessing policy, and under Minnesota law, property taxes and special assessments take priority over all other liens, mechanics liens and mortgage liens, the first and second position, regardless of the date of recordation or origination. So I just want to make sure that we don't get in a situation where, like you've seen in the past, property values falling, lenders having a hefty first on there, thinking that we were going to be able to do that, that there's any kind of an imbalance. That's my only concern about where we're going with this. And if you can help me with that, I think I can be a supporter.
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, I don't think this disrupts the normal rule, which is taxes are the first lien on anything. So if the city or county property taxes aren't paid, they're, I think they're the priority.
We'll pay for it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Anybody else in the audience that needs to speak for or against the bill? Representative Pepin, I see you had a question.
Thanks. This could have been covered by Representative O'Driscoll. I'm just trying to understand. So local governments can loan up to 20% from 10%. So I'm just trying to understand what happens if there's a default. So can taxpayers be on the hook? It looks also like they're going to be able to issue general obligation bonds. So I'm just wondering what the potential liability could be for my constituents.
Please identify yourself for the tape and then.
Sure. Thank you. Allison Grubner, the Department of Commerce, and Representative Pepin. It's my understanding, based on testimony that was heard in the other body, that the property taxes are paid first in the case of a default, and then this lien would be paid next, so second.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pepin, I know we could do an example. Edina is the city that's doing the most of this. There's an auto body shop. Let's just say, for example, that let's say it's worth $1 million. This would allow them to do up to $200,000 worth of energy improvements and put it on their property tax bill and pay it back over 20 years rather than the previous state law, which is they could do $100,000 worth of improvements and they have to pay it back over 10 years.
Representative Pepin. Any other questions? Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Portman, what happens if the property is sold? All of a sudden, they're having some financial difficulties and they want to sell. Who pays that loan then?
Representative Portman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Tice, it is the new property owner would take subject to that obligation, just like the ongoing obligation to pay property taxes would transfer with the property. The ongoing obligation to repay this commitment would transfer with the transfer indeed.
Representative Tice.
Thank you.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just piggybacking off of Representative Tice's question, as is the case in any real estate transaction, I would think that could also become a negotiable item as to whether or not it's going to be assumed in the package or the lender requiring that to be refinanced if there's a purchase or something along that line as well. So it would be no different, in my opinion, with my 30 years of industry experience, that it would be if a property has special assessments for a road and you want a new first mortgage on there, the lender may require that to be paid, and I would suspect that would become an issue in the negotiations of the purchase and sale of the real property that was for commercial purposes covered by this 429 lien.
Representative Hart.
Mr. Chair, I think Representative O'Driscoll has it correct. In a commercial transaction, it could be required to be paid off before the transfer takes place.
Any further questions? Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hartman, if you could just talk a little bit about the repealers and what they do again.
Representative Hartman,
Representative Pepin, we are repealing things that are outdated. So we would be repealing language related to weatherization that's outdated, an energy conservation loan program that is not used. In the Senate, they eliminated one of the repealers, which is Subdivision 3. It's at lines 2.28 and 2.29. And we probably would end up taking the Senate language on the House floor when it comes over because apparently that doesn't need to be unsessioned. And then Subdivision 4 has to do with cooling systems and energy efficiency criteria. But the law that granted that authority was repealed in 1998. So that is why we would repeal that stuff.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. Representative Portman, does that save the state any money? Any of these repealers?
Representative Hartman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, there is some ballpark number that we have for every edition of the Minnesota rules and the Minnesota statutes that we print that every word that you add is like 5 cents or something. But I don't think anybody's done the math on the printing. But I think it's basically in the printing of the rules and the statutes. And as we go online and all of that's online, I think probably the savings are minimal.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? If not, I'll renew my motion. Again, I'll ask anybody in the audience, seeing no one rushing to the microphone, I'll renew my motion that House File 2541, get the right number, be placed on the general register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. The bill is re-referred.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
The next bill on our agenda is House File 653. Representative Quam. Representative Quam, this has been a long journey on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I believe in just-in-time delivery systems. And
Representative Quam, I will move House File 653 to be re-referred to the General Register. And there's an amendment here, the A2 amendment. That's, I understand that's the amendment that everyone's worked out and we have peace in the valley?
Yes, Mr. Chair. It took a little bit of time and a few iterations, but apparently we do have final peace, and I would hope that could be moved to allow the bill to be in the appropriate form.
I'll move House File 650, I'll move the amendment 653A2 amendment to be put the bill in the order that the author wants. All in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Ayes have it. The amendment's adopted. Representative Quam, please describe your bill slightly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you may remember that the committee heard this bill, I believe, twice last year, and that it did move to the floor and was actually on the calendar of the day. Basically, we need to realize that we are in the 21st century, allow for modes of communication between elected officials and the public so we can have that discourse and communication and avoid some confusion. And the some of the issues that when you have like a township with three members, it's really easy to accidentally cross over the open meeting law, and we want to offer protection for those officials that wish to communicate with the public, be more open and transparent, but not have to worry about transgression of the open meeting law if they are not trying to do something untoward. And if they did do something untoward, we all know that anything that we've ever posted online is probably going to be there forever to be used against us, and actually would make it easier to prosecute anyone that did try to do a transgression. So I hope you can support this effort to make a better, more transparent government and improve communication.
And I see you have a testifier. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ken Sulem with the Minnesota Association of Townships. Thank you for having us back here for round three. We appreciate the effort last session to get the discussions underway. Mr. Anfinson from the Newspaper Association and I have spent a lot of time negotiating and exchanging language, and we finally kind of hit upon the fact that we're probably going about this in a very complicated manner rather than just going back to the obvious, which is if it's a meeting today, it remains a meeting under this bill. But we aren't creating a gotcha situation, as Representative Quam indicated, where if two people are talking to the public, not each other, but the public, that wouldn't somehow create that situation of what's known as a serial meeting and therefore create an open meeting law problem. So this just simply says, as long as you're participating in social media with the public, not each other, it is not a violation of the open meeting law. Everything else remains current law, so if it's an illegal meeting today, it remains an illegal meeting after this bill becomes law. It just creates that comfort zone that you don't have an accidental problem.
Questions of the membership? And as was stated, we passed this bill last year, and they were still working on it, and this is one of the bills that came back to us at the end of session last year, and Representative Quam has been very good about continuing to work on this and with all the parties, and this is the outcome of this. So I think we're moving forward. I also have a Charles Nagel that wishes to speak on the bill. Come on down to the microphone. Welcome to our committee. And Mr. Nagel, please state your name for the tape and then proceed with your testimony.
My name is Chuck Nagel. I am a school board member in central Minnesota. And I have wished to speak in opposition to this, to simply pointing out a couple of things. I'll be very brief. I am an absolute advocate as a school board member and otherwise of additional citizen engagement. Getting the public engaged is critical at the local level. This process here is completely open. If this process here could be used by all of our local governments, life would be wonderful. And I also fully support the idea of electronic communications, using email to distribute packets, email to help citizens get information, including interaction with the public. And I would even support, as this bill originally was, to allow interaction between school board members. I think that would be wonderful if the public could observe and listen in. I want to point out, let's not forget how the open meeting law works today, though, that there's no enforcement process. If there's a violation of the open meeting law, the only enforcement is for me as a private citizen to go to district court to try to get it enforced. Okay? There's no government agency that enforces this law. It's a law, but there's no agency to enforce it. When this comparable bill, companion bill, was heard over in the Senate earlier this year, one of the testifiers mentioned that this is just a first in a series of things to come. And I would absolutely agree. This is just opening the cover a little on many things to come relative to open meeting law. And I caution you to really, really think carefully about whether this is really needed. It's very vague. If I read the bill, I read this latest amendment, and I did not understand it the way that Mr. Sulem just explained it. I understood it to be allowing me as a school board member to communicate with a citizen via social media, Facebook, Twitter, or whatever. That's what if you read it literally, that's what that amendment says. And I can do that today. What is not in the bill, which Mr. Sulem explained, was myself and another school board member can both communicate with a citizen via some electronic means, social media. And yes, I can't direct my response directly to my other school board member, but we can use you as a third party, and I can ask you a question. He can respond to you. I can respond to you. He can respond to you. Another can respond. Another can respond. What have we accomplished? What we've really done is opened up another opportunity for local government officials not to violate intentionally, but to take advantage of every opportunity at their disposal. Thank you.
Questions of the testifier? If not, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Anybody else in the audience that needs to speak for or against this bill? If not, I'll renew my motion that House File 653, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Bill is re-referred. Representative Woodard. The next bill is House File 2434. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This one is a much overstated, simple bill. What this does is allow for the Silver Maple portion of the Cedar Lake District to be able to make connection to the New Prague sewer system. And then the second piece of this bill allows for the Cedar Lake Sewer District to be dissolved, and then its assets to be sold off, and any additional revenue to be used to pay for the connections to the city of New Prague, and then the rest of it would go back to those folks who had paid those fees into the sewer district. It is a kumbaya bill. You'll notice in your packet, even the Met Council thinks it's a good idea. I shouldn't have mentioned that to the left.
Representative Woodard, I think that might be a death knell for the government. Well, Representative Woodard, I'll move that House File 2434 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. And I see you have an amendment here. Is that your amendment, the A1 amendment?
Yes, it is. And that's a technical amendment that maybe Ms. Dyson can talk to, but it was something that the Senate had pointed out in the original bill and just kind of helps us put it in the order we need it. So,
Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair, because the section amending the Cedar Lake District is a mandatory local law, it requires local approval. It's a constitutional requirement. So this just adds the local approval requirement to that section of the bill.
Okay. I'll move the A1 amendment. Anybody? All opposed? Or excuse me. Any questions?
This is a tough committee.
Take a deep breath. Any questions on the amendment? If not, all in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment's adopted. And any questions of the bill? Representative O'Driscoll.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Woodard, welcome to the committee. I want to thank you for doing your homework on this. It seems like you've talked to all the interested parties and you've got agreement on there. And that's really very appreciated as someone who has seen a lot of bills coming through government operations this session, that you've dotted all your I's and crossed all your T's. So thank you for thinking of the committee and working so diligently with the Met Council right on down to the local partners on this.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. But I will mention, for my constituents back home, I did not reach out to the Met Council. They actually, the commissioners did that on our behalf, and the commissioners did a great job of making sure everybody was on board with this. So I will give them complete credit for that. But thank you very much.
Any further questions? Anybody in the audience that needs to speak for or against this bill?
Mr. Chair, the two that we had that we had on the testifier list, Ms. Roman couldn't make it this morning, and Mr. Haas was going to try to make it, but it looks like he didn't make it in time. So if you see him in the hallway, tell him that we did a good job here and that his work was appreciated.
I'll tell him you almost killed it by mentioning the Met Council. Anyway, seeing no one else rushing to the microphone, I'll renew my motion that House File 2434, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
The bill's re-referred. Members, we have a group of students here from the St. Louis Park High School that are participating in historic Capitol Historic Sites Voices of the People tour and program. And so let's welcome the people from St. Louis Park. And with that, the next bill on our agenda is Representative Hansen's House File 2474. Welcome to the committee, Representative Hansen. And this is going to the General Register. Yep. If you want to make your motion.
I would like to move House File 2474 be referred to the General Register.
And if you want to describe your bill and then introduce your testifier.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, this is a good bill, and I'd ask you to vote for it. It is a good type of unsessioned bill. It's relating only to Dakota County, but allows them to adopt a county manager plan that has the effect of changing how some of the advisory committees move from having authority to advisory, and it also would allow them to eliminate some of those. So I have with me former House member, former Senator, and current County Commissioner Chris Gerlach, to describe what the bill does.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, Commissioner Gerlach.
Apparently, I can't keep a job.
I was wondering about that myself,
Commissioner. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Hasn't his salary
ever gone up and his people had gone down.
And I'm not much of a statistician, but that's a good trend line. So, thank you,
Mr. Chair,
and members. Very briefly, this bill is really simply about allowing Dakota County to have more control, flexibility over its advisory committees, boards, commissions, much like the review that the legislature took under this past year to examine which ones are functioning correctly, which ones are obsolete, what can we do. This really came out of that study and effort what I will do is to explain. We're trying to do this in one fell swoop instead of picking them off one by one by one. As you probably know, state statute allows for various forms of county government, and over the many decades, many counties, Dakota County included, has come to the legislature asking for legislative approval to sort of cherry-pick and pick and choose certain pieces of the various silos of the various forms of county government to best fit what we're doing. This is simply another step in that evolutionary process. It, even though the write-up says changing to county manager form, it actually doesn't go all the way. It does pick and choose some of the pieces that will do two main things. The bulk of it is to allow us that flexibility over those advisory committees, and the second piece is simply to formalize some of the operating practices that we've been working under for a long time, such as the way our county administrator functions through duties we have delegated over the years, such as the Personnel Act, which was actually approved by the legislature several decades ago. Some of those things that have been patched together, this will formalize that and modernize the way we operate in our county. I will tell you that this does not convert any elected positions to appointed. I know that those issues crop up from time to time. I know there's bills every year about that. This does not do that. Does not alter anything there. As I mentioned about the advisory committees, the Dakota County has 13 advisory committees now. We're not touching the quasi-judicial committees. For example, the Planning Commission or the Zoning Board of Adjustment or the Personnel Board of Appeals. Those that have quasi-judicial powers, we're not touching those. We're focusing in on things like the Library Board, the Community Corrections Advisory Board, the Human Services Advisory Committee, various other things that we want to be able to modify and update and modernize without having to have legislative approval on every single one. So that is essentially what we are after, and can certainly answer any questions any members may have.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, Mr. Gerlach, it sounds like it's an innovative bill. We've got 87 counties in the state of Minnesota. Why isn't this being put on a more grand scale for the other 86, including Dakota?
Representative Hansen?
I think there actually was a bill relating to Blue Earth County a little earlier, but we like, being first and trying to provide an example. I think this is one that other counties may look at as this goes forward. I think one of the advisory committees, Commissioner Gerlach mentioned, has been around for 26 years. That was created for a purpose, that community corrections, and the purpose isn't there anymore. And some of these we can't find people to apply for. Mm-hmm. So, we're happy to take this step out there as one of the first to do this, and hopefully other counties would look at it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll. Any other questions? Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for either of you. I don't. I like the idea of what you're doing, and I think that would be a great idea if the legislature had some kind of a commission that could look at all outdated. I think that would be a great thing that we had. I don't know if the author supports that or not. I think that would be really great. We should really think about doing that. But
Chair, would be open to a friendly amendment.
Yeah. But so my question is, though, so obviously I do like this kind of ability, but I don't understand how the county manager plan doesn't say anything about the ability to do that. Where could I look to that document? I don't understand what gives you the authority under the words county manager plan to do all those things. I assume it's in one of the statutes mentioned, but if you could just clarify on that.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to have Ms. Dyson, because we, following one of the earlier bills that went through, I asked for a memo on this, so I had a better idea, and Ms. Dyson,
Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pepin, actually, there's a publication on options in county government structure that I had sent to Representative Hansen and to the chair. But the, yes, Chapter 375A of Minnesota statutes provides for five options for county government structure. There's the county administrator, the elected executive, county manager, at-large chair, and then a combination county auditor administrator. That's also the chapter that authorizes various county officers to be converted from an elected position to an appointed position. And most of the, up until now, all the special law bills that have been coming through the committee have related to appointment of recorder, treasurer, auditor as a special law. And the special laws were simply saying that it could be done by resolution subject to 80% reverse referendum, as opposed to the general law, which is a referendum up front. This is very similar in that sense, that the general law does provide for this plan, and it spells out in the statute what that means. But the under general law, you start with the referendum on the question of whether or not to do it. And this is saying that the board can do it by the board resolution.
Representative Pepin.
It's in Chapter 375A, what is encompassed by a county manager plan. And then, as the Commissioner Gerlach mentioned, it's not taking everything from that, because it's it says that certain things that are already applied to the county are not preempted. And so that's a couple of subdivisions in the bill that say those provisions are not preempted by this.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. That helps clarify and appreciate it.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hansen and Commissioner Gerlach, you know, I talked to you, Commissioner, about kind of how this works, and I think I understand it. The one area that I'm concerned about, I wonder if the author thought about, is what about the people? Do they, I mean, in the general law, as Ms. Dyson pointed out, we have the ability for the people to set these structures and change the structure of government. Have you thought about, you know, a reverse referendum capability or something like that? This is really the commissioners taking that authority to make that move, even though it is a hybrid, as was pointed out. So I'm curious about your thoughts around that.
Mr. Gura.
Chairman and Representative Drazkowski, I can answer that because I thought about that, and I think you and I share a lot of the same philosophy about how the government should relate to the people and these sorts of things. And this is by resolution, not referendum. And as I've dug into it, I saw that the reason I believe that the referendum requirement is in there is because when you fundamentally change the election of elected officials, when you're doing that, which if you were pure county administrator going to pure county manager, you are fundamentally changing that the structure of that government, then you would require a referendum, and I would say you should not waive that requirement. This process, however, has been going on for decades, where different pieces have been picked and chosen and these sorts of things. And the point we're at now is simply not about changing the form of the elected people, the elected, you know, commissioners, but rather the advisory committees to those elected people. And that is a step removed, and for positive or for functional government, we need the ability to be able to structure those advisory committees to help us do that job. So I don't believe the referendum requirement was in there for this level of minutia. I think that it's for if you're changing from elected to appointed, of which this bill doesn't do. So that's the conclusion that I had come to in examining the bill.
And Mr. Chair, I would hope that we wouldn't be at the point of having to have a countywide referendum to eliminate the Community Corrections Advisory Team, the committee that was set up 26 years ago for a specific purpose and still is there. I mean, I think that's the question. Do you have a referendum in a community, in a town or a county where we're probably having 200,000, 300,000 people vote to have a referendum on any time we are modifying or changing or eliminating an advisory committee? I think the cost on that would be quite substantial.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, I was thinking more in terms of, you know, the carrying out of the provisions of this bill. Could you have the option for your your county citizens to at least have a check on the commissioners and this bill through the ability maybe to have a reverse referendum if enough of them put enough petition signatures together, which it sounds like is not going to be the case, but at least you would be honoring the people in the county that way. Have you thought about that as the bill gets implemented, or you know, the change to county manager gets implemented?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I believe that we elect these county commissioners. They do run for office. They're taking themselves out to the voters. Are you up this fall? Or are you?
No.
Well, there goes that argument. But I mean, they do. They are out there running, and you know, and just the same as you know, those of us who are authoring this, there's a check on us at the election, and I think this is a step where one county is asking for this. I think it's a doable thing, and it's appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, my colleague, Representative Jaskowski, just asked one of my questions, and so my second is wondering what this process has looked like thus far that has brought you to this point. How much time has been invested, and where are you, Dakota County, at in the process?
Representative Gerlach, or excuse me, yes. Commissioner Gerlach.
Yeah, well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Pugh, now I've been on the county board just for a little over a year myself, but I do know that for many years, having represented in the legislature Dakota County, that it's been an ongoing process for many years. I do know, well, for example, we have been looking at our library board for some time. This is a great example. This is a library system that statute grants a lot of authority to an appointed board. Well, that board in Dakota County now has about nearly $12 million budget, 136 employees in 9 buildings, and there's no elected official oversight of the details of what's going on there. And it's not a modern system of how things function. So that's one that has been examined for a long time, and we've been watching other counties go through this, Washington County, Scott County, Blue Earth County, just this session, to look at that and say there's probably a better way for some oversight of this piece. And so that's been going on a long time. We've had county workshops for since I've started on the county board, examining governance structure, looking at what are the best models for getting citizen input. We use that just recently in the last month by forming a citizen advisory committee for a park master plan that we really needed. So there's one where we brought some citizens to the table, and we used some of these principles that we're trying to achieve through this bill here. So it's been going on for many, many years.
Representative Pugh.
Well, thank you for that answer. I'm asking this question because I'm very interested in pursuing something similar to this for Carver County, one of the counties that I represent, and I think that's very similar to the county that you are currently serving. And I just see this as a tremendous, tremendous opportunity to streamline and have that oversight that you're speaking to. It's been going on for years, this you know, looking into this, just wondering, you know, how quickly you anticipate, you know, getting your arms around the opportunity to implement this oversight.
Yeah.
Commissioner Gerlach.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Pugh, it certainly does take time, but my advice to you would be is do it when things are running well, not when there's a problem. Mm-hmm. It's because when you have a crash with one of your committees, and then you try to change and say, because this didn't work, because our management structure wasn't functioning properly, then it is nearly impossible to try to make the changes you need to make. So my advice to you to give to Carver County would be to examine these things when they're running well, and that is the time to change, make some changes.
Mm-hmm. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Any further questions of members? Anybody in the audience that needs to speak for or against this bill? Seeing no one rushing to the microphones, I'll renew my motion that House File 2474 be placed on the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. The bill is re-referred. And Representative Gerlach?
Yeah.
Representative Gerlach, I can tell, or Commissioner Gerlach, I can tell by your years in the Senate you've got more verbose.
Well, it's the week of the road.
Anyway, members, House File 2613, and members, just a little road map here. We're going to progress 2724 to Friday, and we'll get this bill done today. We won't have to meet this evening. There's still work being done between the opponents and the governor's office to try and come up with peace in the valley, and I'm working hard with both sides to try and hold their feet to the fire to come up with something that they can all agree on. So we're going to move 2724 to Friday, and this will be our last bill. And before I do that, Representative Freiberg, you want to move the minutes?
Sure, I will move the minutes of the Tuesday, March 25th meeting.
The motion has been made that the minutes for March 24th be approved as written. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The aye has it.
Oh, no.
And
General registration?
Yes.
Hello, Representative Nelson. House File 2613. I understand you would like to recommend that this be moved to the General Register.
I'll move that House File 2613 be re-referred to the General Register. And members, in your packet, there's an A1 amendment, and it's a technical amendment, and I'd like to move the A1 amendment to put it in the form it needs to be.
Okay. Any questions to the A1 amendment? Okay. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted. The motion prevails. Representative Nelson, to your bill as amended.
And thank you, members. And I have John Doan here, and he will explain what we're doing here and go forward from there.
Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the tape.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Doan. I'm director for Hennepin County's Housing, Community Works, and Transit Department. Before you today is a fairly technical bill that streamlines how Hennepin County can partner with other political subdivisions on programs that create jobs and spur economic development. Also, there is a handout that summarizes the five major or the five key changes that would be.
It's not on my plan. That's okay.
Included, as mentioned, is an author's amendment that clarifies that this bill does not create a new program, but rather is streamlining and enhancing the existing multi-jurisdictional program. And the bill does five things, and you'll see in the handout that they're noted what those five things are. The first is that it allows Hennepin County's Housing and Redevelopment Authority to partner directly with other political subdivisions. Currently, the HRA must first enter into an agreement with the county, and then the county enters into an agreement with the other political subdivision. This legislation eliminates the need for such a three-party agreement, and it can be a direct agreement between the HRA and the political subdivision. Secondly, it adds the watershed districts to the list of political subdivisions that the county can partner with. Third, it clarifies language that the county can use the multi-jurisdictional program for an economic development purpose. Fourth, it adds transit improvement areas as designated by the State Department of Economic and or Employment and Economic Development to the eligible areas that the county can use this authority under. And then last but not least, it eliminates confusion by replacing must language with may language to clarify that the multi-jurisdictional program could include one or some of the list of prescribed activities, but does not need to include all of them. In the spirit of the unsession, this bill helps to streamline how Hennepin County can partner with others to create jobs and to spur economic development. And I'd like to open back to the chair for if you have any questions.
Sure. Are there questions for Mr. Doan or Representative Nelson? Representative Pepin?
Mr. Nelson, what was the name?
Doan.
D-O-A-N.
D-O-A-N. For either of you, the amendment that authorized, changed from created to authorized, and I think you said it already exists, so that makes sense to not have created, but it's really expanding the authority, correct?
It does provide for the opportunity to partner with others that aren't listed, in particularly the watershed districts, yes.
Representative Pepin?
Thank you. So, by adding more things that would potentially have taxing authority, I think that's somewhat problematic for me. I guess specifically for the HRA and the watershed districts, how are those folks elected, or are they appointed, or how is it that it's decided who are on those, who speaks for those groups?
Mr. Doan.
Mr. Chair, House Representative Pepin.
Yeah.
My understanding, and I will ask others to correct me if I'm wrong, I believe the watershed districts some of these conservation districts are elected, but I wanted to confer with others who may be more familiar with that. Yes, I'm seeing head nods that they are elected.
Representative Pepin?
Thank you. And well, perhaps somebody from the watershed district could come and talk about it. What I'm wondering what the main purpose is of the watershed district. Is it to develop land, or is it to ensure clean water? If somebody could talk about the mission, that's probably not you, but maybe there's somebody from the watershed district.
Mr. Doan, did you want to take that, or is there anybody in the audience?
Mr. Chair and Member Pepin, I don't want to pretend or speak for the watershed district, but I would say that in conversations with them about this language, that what I've heard from them is that they do not see themselves as an economic development entity. They are a water quality and environmental protection type of entity, and that this language allows for the county, along with other local political subdivisions, to more take on that role of economic development, but then to partner with them where they have parcels of land that they've acquired for water quality purposes. And so it really does not confer to the watershed districts that economic development authority. It really allows them to partner with other agencies that would do that.
Representative Pepin?
Thank you, Mr. Doan. So I like the mission of the watershed district. It seems like the watershed district has made some purchases on the Minnehaha Creek Restoration Project. Looks like there's quite a lot of land purchases. And do you know how much the watershed district has purchased and what is still what is outstanding in their what they still owe?
Mr. Doan?
Mr. Chair, Member Pepin, I do not have those details and would leave that for the watershed district. And unfortunately, I do not believe that there is anybody in the audience from the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District. But I'd be happy to connect with them and to get you that information.
Representative Pepin?
Thank you, Mr. Doan. And my understanding is that the Watershed District bought that property for a large amount, more than it was valued at, something in the neighborhood of about $10 million, and $15 million more. I know that, I believe the sale was for $15 million, but I think the land was valued at about $5 million. And I'm just trying to understand why that was done. And along with that, it's my understanding that there are some state or federal rules that would limit Hennepin County from buying property along the rail corridor, and I'm wondering if that's why the watershed district bought the property, because the county couldn't buy the property because of state or federal regulations. Is that true?
Mr. Doan?
Mr. Chair, Member Pepin, I'm not aware of those regulations or those constraints or any of those conversations that might have happened, but again, I can go back and connect with the watershed district and get you that information.
Representative Pepin?
Thank you, Mr. Doan. Is there So I assume they want to develop this restoration project, and is there wondering if there's any more specific projects that the Watershed District wants to develop.
Mr. Doan?
Mr. Chair, Member Pepin, not to my knowledge, the site that you're referring to is one that has come up in conversation with the Watershed District and Hennepin County, but there isn't any other ones that I am aware of.
Representative Pepin?
Thank you, Mr. Doan. I, because of some of these questions being unanswered, I'm uncomfortable with this bill right now, and you know, we're having additional governmental agencies, or however you want to describe it, acquiring property, and I'm not really sure how that works. Who would be legally, is it the Watershed District, is the county, who would be legally on the hook for this if something weren't paid off?
Mr. Doan?
Mr. Chair, Member Pepin, those details would need to be worked out in a partnership agreement under the multi-jurisdictional authority. And so those are yet to be defined, and I believe the flexibility...
That's not different from what is now.
Yes.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Nelson,
that's not different from what it is. This doesn't change that. That would be the same thing would have to happen in an agreement with them, even if these people, even if Hennepin County wasn't added into this. The existing people that are in there would have to do the same thing.
Representative Pepin?
Thank you, Mr. Doan. I think you said that the Watershed District is elected. The Hennepin County Housing and Redevelopment Authority, they're also allowed to appropriate funds. Are they elected?
Mr. Doan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, the Housing, Community Works, and Transit Department within Hennepin County reports up to the county administrator, who then reports to the County Board of Commissioners. And so the County Board of Commissioners ultimately makes those decisions, and they're an elected body of seven.
Representative Pepin.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Well, when you add the words, or the Hennepin County Housing and Redevelopment Authority may appropriate funds, that doesn't say to me that it has to be approved by the county board and run up through the pipeline. It says to me that they have the authority to do it. Otherwise, why would you add it in? And already, under current law, it says Hennepin County may appropriate funds for any of the activities, but you're adding Hennepin County Housing and Redevelopment Authority, so there's no requirement, according to that, that you would have to get anything approved by Hennepin County, and that's why I'm interested if they're elected when you're having folks make spending decisions with tax dollars and they're not elected. Who's accountable? If you could just comment on that.
Mr. Doan.
Mr. Chair and Member Pepin, the Housing and Redevelopment Authority is a separate entity, but it is the Board of Commissioners acting as the HRA. So it is an elected body, at least is my understanding of how state statute creates the Housing and Redevelopment Authority.
Representative Pepin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Dolman, why is that language needed?
Mr. Dolman?
Mr. Chair and Member Pepin, the language is needed. Right now what happens is that the Housing and Redevelopment Authority enters into an agreement with the county, and then the county enters in an agreement with the other political subdivision. This would streamline it to allow for the HRA to directly partner with that political subdivision. It is more of a streamlining so that we don't have to, or I'm sorry, that the county board does not have to have a meeting, make the decision to enter an agreement, and then the HRA has to have the same meeting and enter into an agreement as well. So it eliminates the need for a three-party agreement instead of just having a two-party agreement.
Representative Pepin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Doan, I'm still confused. You're saying that the county board is the HRA, so I don't understand why there's two separate meetings. I think that's very confusing. So the Hennepin County Housing and Redevelopment Authority, are those meetings then open to the public? And so just to clarify, everybody on the HRA, it's just the county, if you're on the county board, you're in the HRA. So you can have HRA meetings, and are they open to the public? This is totally baffling to me why we would, to me it seems like you're adding more than streamlining.
Mr. Doan?
Mr. Chair and Member Pepin, that's exactly right. It is cumbersome right now in that the HRA needs to enter an agreement with the county, who then needs to enter an agreement with the other political subdivision. This streamlines it. It actually eliminates the need for a three-party agreement and allows the HRA to enter directly into agreement with the political subdivision. The HRA meetings are open to the public. They are, again, they are similar, or they are the same body as the Board of Commissioners. So the seven commissioners in Hennepin County also are the board for the Housing and Redevelopment Authority of the county.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. I think that's very odd, very confusing. But so now when we add this, so the HRA, which apparently is also the county board, it says, or in the on line 1.23 and 2.1, or in designated transit improvement areas. So that gives them additional authority to appropriate funds to buy a transit station. Is that, how is that a change, or how does that work?
Mr. Doan.
Mr. Chair, Member Pepin, yes, and just to your last question with regard to the Housing and Redevelopment Authority, just to also clarify that it is my understanding that that is how it is structured in other counties as well that have HRAs, is that the county board is the HRA board as well. With regard to the transit improvement areas, this would allow under the multi-jurisdictional authority for the county to partner with agencies to work on projects that are within the de-designated transit improvement areas.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Doan, well, I find a lot of things troubling about this bill, but I would like specific information on the board, the watershed district, and how much money they've bonded for. Something seems a little fishy to me on this whole thing, to be honest with you, because my understanding is they paid $10 million more for this Minnehaha Creek Restoration Project, which is along a rail corridor, and that there are potentially federal and state regulations that would prevent the county from being able to purchase that along a rail corridor. And it just seems like the watershed district, who I'm still I'm not 100% convinced that they're appointed.
It says it's governed by a seven-member board appointed by the county.
Well, yeah, and there's some information here that says they're appointed, not elected. So if they're not an elected board, I find this whole thing very problematic. And why Hennepin County can't apparently do it is because there's some federal and state regulation along the corridor while it's under environmental review. So to me, it just seems like kind of a shell game when you're trying to kind of, I feel like there's something hidden here with all these different authorities that are being granted additional bonding and appropriating authority. And I guess I'd just like more information. This is troubling to me.
Representative Nelson.
Nothing further.
Well, perhaps, I don't know if Ms. Dyson, Representative Duszkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Doan, obviously something inspired this bill. Can you tell us more about this Minnehaha Creek Restoration Project? And it seems that there may have been inconvenience in the current law for Hennepin County, and so we're coming forward with a special law change here that allows them to go around some current laws. So can you tell us what that is? Tell us about this Minnehaha Creek Restoration Project along the railroad tracks, and I'm trying to learn more about it, but is this the project that inspired this bill?
Mr. Doan?
Mr. Chair and Member Driscoll.
Very good.
Thank you. With regard to the Miao Creek Watershed District's restoration project along the creek in that area, I believe it's in the St. Louis Park, Hopkins area. The project, I have to apologize, I don't have the details of that project and cannot speak to it in much depth, but that was what inspired at least that piece of the proposed bill in partnering with the Watershed District is to make sure that, one, that they're focused on their mission, which is water quality and preservation of that water asset, which is the Miao Creek. With regard to economic development, that is something that is not the focus of the Miao Creek Watershed District, but it's something that they've asked the local communities, the city of Hopkins, as well as St. Louis Park and Edina, as well as the county, to work with them to make sure that for those pieces that are more economic development related, that they are not authorized to do, that then their partners, their other public entities, can work with and focus on those pieces. So it's I think that it's a deliberate action to make sure that they stay in their lane, that they stay focused on what their core mission is, and that others that do economic development would then take on more of that role.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Doan, again, so we've got, and I'm reading the bill here, and excuse me for not going as learning this as quickly as I can, but Hennepin County and the HRA will partner with one of these entities here, of which now the Watershed District is added as one of the entities, to form a multi-jurisdictional reinvestment program. So it seems that there's, I mean, this is allowing these three partners in this case to work together in doing economic development. That's what I gather as it relates to this piece of property. Is that, I mean, is that what the goal is, to allow those three entities to develop this piece of property? Is that the goal of the bill?
Mr. Doan?
Mr. Chair and Member Drazkowski, that is not the sole intent of this bill. This bill is meant to allow for, and it currently does allow for, Hennepin County and the Housing and Redevelopment Authority of the county to partner with other political subdivisions in order to spur economic development and create jobs. That's the intent of the multi-jurisdictional language, and I think that the goal of the proposed language is to further allow for those natural partnerships to occur.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still struggling to understand exactly what's going on here, too. So, Mr. Doan, why is it that why specifically do we have to have this bill? Cannot the HRA and or Hennepin County do this on their own under current law?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
What this bill is doing has been, as we've stated before, it's allowed right now, the HRA needs to go through the county board to these other entities and have a three-part agreement to do this. This streamlines it to make government more efficient so that they can just do this one-on-one and have those agreements. This is trying about efficiency. It's about creating jobs. It's about doing redevelopment in areas, and by including the watershed districts into it, we can do the redevelopment and deal with the water quality issues, pollution, polluted sites, all those things along the way. That's what this bill is about. It's not about this project that's being pulled out of midair about the Minnehaha Watershed District. That is not what this bill is about. It's not. It's about ongoing in the county. That's one small part of Hennepin County, and there are many multiple watershed districts in the county that this would help and help create and help clean up polluted sites and create development in those areas for business development, create jobs,
going forward.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Nelson, why are we doing a special bill for Hennepin County then and not doing a general law for the state to allow those same articulation capabilities?
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, this bill, and Representative Druskowski, this bill was brought to me by Hennepin County. It's in this, clearly a part of statute that's dealing with Hennepin County and not the other counties, and that's why this bill is drafted the way it's drafted. If other counties want this authority or want to be able to do that, they can step forward and we could add them to this, but none of them have approached me so far.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Nelson. Mr. Doan.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I am sitting here listening to all of this, and I'm getting more, frankly, more disturbed by the moment. You know, Mr. Doan, you talked about this bill streamlining and enhancing, and you know, the HRA needs to enter into a relationship with the county, and then we're involving this, you know, this other political subdivision, the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District, and which you specifically said, and I agree with, is its main purpose is, you know, water quality and environmental protection. And here, just have all of this documentation here in front of me about the millions of dollars that the Watershed District has, you know, spent, you know, taxpayer money purchasing land, you know, in that area. And that wouldn't appear to me. I mean, I would love to have somebody here. Is there anybody here from the Watershed District?
My understanding is they are not. Mr. Representative Nelson?
Mr. Chair, there's nobody here from the Watershed District, and that's been asked and answered a couple of times already. And this isn't has nothing to do with that Watershed District. What the Watershed District is doing, this doesn't change their ability to do what they've already done. They already have that authority. They're an elected body, and they already have the authority to do what was done, what they did. This bill changes nothing in that. And would not take that authority away or grant them more authority to do that. It would just allow them to partner with the cities and the county through this mechanism to be able to help with the development and do the water quality parts of it.
Representative Pugh?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm not clear that this is an elected board, that the Watershed District, I would like clarity about that. And I'm, you know, it seems to me that, you know, here we have this situation that has been, you know, brought to our attention. And, you know, we have the cart then before the horse that this Watershed District has purchased, you know, $1.3 million, you know, $200,000. Here we have another $153,000, and then the $14,950,000, you know, purchase. And you know, I'm not clear. You know, I mean, clearly this isn't the focus of the Watershed District, and so it seems as though we're creating this legislation to cover this situation that is already well underway. And I you know, I could be wrong about that. I'd very much like to, you know, ask some questions of the Watershed District to see if, you know, understand what their mission is and why this is necessary. What are we doing here?
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I misspoke. The Watershed Authority, the Minnehaha, is appointed, but this bill has nothing to deal with the situation, the money that you're talking about that's spent. They already have that authority to do that. They're already doing that. This bill changes nothing to do with that. It has nothing to do with that. So I don't know why we're bringing this into the situation. This doesn't change what they've already done. It won't go back and change what they've already done. They are already exercising authority that they've already been granted.
Representative Pugh?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm very concerned about this, creating this, you know, relationship with the third party. I think that this doesn't enhance transparency. It may streamline things for government, but it certainly doesn't streamline the process or make government more accessible and more transparent to concerned citizens. And, you know, I know from, you know, having spoken with many concerned citizens about the authority that unelected boards have of their concern, and I'm concerned about it. And the more I hear and the more I see and learn of this situation, I'm disturbed by it and would very much like to see this bill laid over until we can get clarity from one of the three organizations that are going to be a part of this legislation to answer some questions for us.
That sounded more like a comment than a question. Is there anybody in the audience who wanted to speak for or against this bill? I believe I asked that. Okay. I don't have anybody else on the list to speak on this bill. Did you have any closing comments, Representative Nelson?
I think we've exhausted the questions. Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that House File 2613.
Representative Drazkowski?
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure I'm still not completely clear here. So we have a watershed district, and as I understand, watershed districts have taxing authority. They use taxpayer money to buy a piece of land, and I'm looking at a map. I could guess it's a couple, 3-4 acres in size. I don't know. From what I can tell, I can see some roofs, etc. For about $15 million. And this bill then is going to give them, in coordination with two other jurisdictions, the ability to engage in economic development for that same property. Mr. Doan, is that what it does?
Mr. Doan?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Drazkowski, this bill does not allow or provide authority for the watershed districts to do economic development. What it does allow is for Hennepin County to partner with other political subdivisions, which would include watershed districts, in order to move forward on economic development projects. It does not confer to those other entities that do not already have the authority for economic development to do economic development.
Representative Nelson?
Mr. Chair, and to answer that question, it does not give the watershed district any new authority. They already have the authority. This project that they're talking about has already been done. It's under the authority they already have. This doesn't add to any authority they have. It doesn't extend economic development to them, authority to them. It just allows the county to partner with them to move forward economic development in areas.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Drazkowski,
and Mr. Doan and Representative Nelson, so what we have here, though, I mean, a multi-jurisdictional investment program, which this bill enables, as far as I can tell, land that is acquired through a watershed district's taxation ability in taxing its residents, that acquired land to then be developed by Hennepin County and or their HRA. Is that what this bill does?
Mr. Doan?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Drazkowski, this language would allow for Hennepin County or another political subdivision, like, for example, a city. In this example, the city of Hopkins, to partner with the watershed district. And for this parcel in particular, that the city or the county would do the redevelopment or partner with a private entity to do the redevelopment. The watershed district would not be doing the redevelopment in this case.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you. And Mr. Doan, so without this bill, though, Mr. Doan, this particular triangle-shaped parcel of land that's been purchased using watershed district acquired taxpayer funds, this bill enables that land to be developed through this multi-jurisdictional program by those other entities, as you pointed out. But with this bill, that would not be possible. Is that correct?
Representative Nelson?
Mr. Speaker, or Mr. Mm-hmm. Chair, no. It doesn't change the authority of the watershed district. Mm-hmm. Again, they've already acquired this under their existing authority, under their existing taxation authority, and it would not change that
and it would not have either helped that or hindered that from happening in the past. Okay. This, what this bill does moving forward is allow, let's take one step out of it. Instead of having the HRA have to partner with the county board, to partner with the city of Brooklyn Center, the city of Minneapolis, or any of the other entities that are would be affected by this, to be able to do what they want to do. This just allows, takes one step out of that, and it doesn't change anything that the Watershed Authority already has done. It just allows them to, in this case, to be able to partner with the HRA if there's going to be doing development, that they can do their job of the water management, cleaning up the polluted sites, taking care of the water quality in those areas while development goes on simultaneously along that site. It doesn't change what the ability, the project that you're mentioning, it has no effect on that project that you're talking about.
And our intent is to vote on this bill before the committee adjourns, which is scheduled to occur at 11:30, and I do have two other members on the list with questions. Representative Druskowski?
Well, Mr. Chair, I still have questions about it. I guess my concern is it appears, we, the legislature, long before I arrived here, and many of us arrived here, gave watershed districts the ability to tax in order to accomplish their mission, which is water quality. I think we can agree that their mission is to do with keeping our water clean. And what we have here is a bill that is somehow, and I still don't completely understand it, allowing land that's been acquired under the guise of water quality, and here's a $15 or $17 million piece of land, which I don't know why the watershed district would buy a 2 or 3 or 5 acre piece of land. I can't tell the size.
17.
Oh, 17. I underestimated. A 17 acre piece of land at about $1 million an acre for water quality. So something doesn't smell right in Hollywood, and I don't really know what it is. But Mr. Chair, maybe the right thing to do is to hold on to this bill until Friday, until we get some more of those folks from that watershed district here.
Just so it's clear, you know, this bill doesn't do anything. There's a separate chapter in statutes dealing with the authorities of watershed districts and water management commissions. I know when I was in the City Council of Golden Valley, we discussed that periodically because, as you pointed out, watershed districts do have taxation authority. That sounds like it might, you know, you can debate the merits of that or not. That might be an appropriate topic for a separate bill, but this bill just relates to a unrelated chapter of statutes. Mm-hmm. Is that a correct description, Representative Nelson?
That's correct. Yeah. This bill has nothing to do with the project that the red herring that's being thrown up here about this project that the Minnehaha Watershed District has done. This doesn't change their ability to do what they've already done. It doesn't enhance their ability to do that in the future. This bill does nothing to do with that, and the questions being answered aren't on the bill and aren't what the bill does. They're on something else totally different that this bill would have no effect on.
Representative Pepin was next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson. I'm sorry I didn't talk to you about this earlier. This is relatively new information that I'm trying to piece together. I think we're all trying to piece together. And, the part that is especially troubling to me is because that apparently there are certain federal regulations that would prevent Hennepin County from purchasing land along a rail corridor while it's under environmental review. Meanwhile, the Watershed District purchases this land and spends $10 million more than it's worth. They're an unelected, they're appointed body, and they have taxing authority. And so I want to be very sure before we vote on this that we know exactly what we're doing. And seeing as how, as Representative Pugh pointed out, we don't have the Watershed District here or anybody else from the Redevelopment Authority, et cetera, to ask further questions, I will move that we table this bill until Friday or later, until we can, a time when we can get these folks. So I'll move that, and I will ask for a roll call.
Okay. Representative Pepin has moved to table this bill. That's a non-debatable motion. She's asked for a roll call vote. The clerk will take the roll.
Nelson?
No.
Freiberg?
No.
Pepin?
Aye.
Dorholt?
No.
Duskowski?
Aye.
Falk?
No.
Hansen?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Lean?
No.
O'Driscoll?
Yes.
Pugh?
Yes.
Sanders? Tice?
Yes.
Winkler?
No.
There are 5 ayes and 8 nays. The motion to table does not prevail. Representative Kahn was next on the list.
Mr. Chairman, I don't understand what the problem is. This is a bill that only pertains to Hennepin County. It's a bill that was brought to the author by Hennepin County. It's been around for long enough for any other county who wanted in to decide to do it. I think we should just vote it out now.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Pugh is next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, since no one is here from the Watershed District, I'm wondering if Ms. Dyson might have any information in statute about not the taxing authority. We know that the Watershed District has taxing authority, but does a Watershed District have authority to purchase this amount of land in question? Is that something that would be in statute?
Ms. Dyson?
excuse me, Mr. Chair and Representative Pugh, I don't have a great familiarity with watershed district authorities, but my understanding is they can purchase land. I don't know what the statute has in terms of the restrictions on the purposes and scope, so I can't address your question.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Thank
Representative Pepin was next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like a roll call on the bill.
Okay, thank you. A roll call has been requested. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Nelson renews his motion that House File 2613, as amended, be referred to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Nelson?
Aye.
Freiberg?
Yes.
Pepin?
No.
Dorholt? Duskowski?
No.
Falk?
Aye.
Hansen?
Yes.
Kahn?
Yes.
Lean?
Aye.
We can get any answers.
O'Driscoll?
No.
Pugh?
No.
Tice?
No.
Winkler?
Yes.
There being 8 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails. The bill is referred to the General Register. Thank you, Mr. Doan. Thank you, Representative Nelson.
Members, with that, that's the last bill we had. The other bill, the rules bill, will take up Friday. So we meet Friday morning at 9 a.m. And the pensions will be up first thing on the agenda, members. So
thank you. This meeting is.
In what room are we on a Friday?
We are in room 5.
We're in room 5 on Friday.
This meeting is adjourned.